Woo! All right, Euphorians.
I need a hero.
I don't know any of the words.
Lyrics, I don't know the song.
Nate Jacobs is a loser.
He's a rap bastard.
Ethan is a hero.
Yeah, Ethan is a hero.
All right.
Like we said last week, we stan a short king.
We stan a short king. I don't think he's that short, though. Like, honestly, he's not. On stage, he looks tall as fuck.
No, we looked it up. He's like 5'7", I think.
Austin Abrams.
Not to
shame.
I don't want to be down on him.
No, he's a hero.
Anyway, but he is a...
he's a hero.
I think he qualifies as a short king.
He's a medium height hero.
Okay. He's an average height.
No. King. We need to pop some champagne and pour one out for Lexi Howard, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes,
and...
absolutely.
Okay, go. Oh, fuck. That
there
was loud.
It is.
Woo! Yeah. All right. Listen to that pour.
The
Listen
Drinking,
to that champagne
Lexi's
pour.
Red curtain razors.
Yeah, on our Instagram, we posted a new cocktail we made tonight in honor of Lexi's play.
We finally upped our game and sourced some cooks.
We realized it's really fucking stupid that we never made, like, cocktail recipes per episode. We're so dumb for not doing themed cocktails.
All
we're
good
have
at
to.
Is drinking, so.
Well, thank God season 3's renewed because we can do that. We can do it then.
I'm hesitant to even say we're good at drinking because our recipes may be hit or miss.
Good at
but
drinking?
It's more,
we're great at drinking. You mean good at making drinks?
Yes, okay. So we're great at drinking. We're also good at making drinks. We're just on a budget, so our drink recipes may be...
yeah, a little rough.
Of moderate quality, but it's not because of a lack of taste, just resources.
No, and anything with cooks is great, but let's cheers to the play.
Yeah, cheers.
To our life.
To our life.
To our life by Lexi Howard. Also, honestly, like, cheers to Maude Apatow. She fucking killed that episode. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely just, like, blew me away. Like, I knew she could act already, obviously, like, but, wow, she just, like, really did such a good job.
Yeah, fantastic.
So cute.
That's another super, super solid episode. Like,
she's so heartwarming to watch on screen, too. Like, you're just rooting for her
likeable.
So hard in this episode.
Yeah, I like her a lot. She's very, very likable. This was a real, like, Revenge of the Nerds episode for her.
Yeah.
Well, for everyone.
Did you feel like your inner high school, like, student? Were you, like, feeling yourself out?
Wished my high school was like this.
No, but I mean, like, were you feeling, like when she was talking about high school and stuff? And, like, one day I'm going to be, like, the best and, like, everyone else is going to suck? Were you feeling your inner high school moments?
I never, like, necessarily, like... felt like I wanted that, but I did, like, relate to her in, like, other ways as being, like, you know, just always, like, on the, like, periphery.
Yeah. No, you're not really like that, but I was, like, thinking of you because even if you're not actually, like, manifesting that or saying that out loud, I could see you being like, God, I'm so over this. Like, one day I'm just gonna be so much cooler than all these other people.
Yeah, and high school was a lot of, like, just sitting on the edge, like, watching everyone and, like, hating them. And in my head, like, dreaming of, like, what she does. Like, just...
dreaming of a better future.
Just lampooning everyone, like, aggressively.
And look at you now, living in New York City with a fat tabby cat named Meatball, with a podcast about HBO's Euphoria. Look at you go, Alex. Look at you go. You're just like the little Lexi Howard.
Living the dream.
Alex Howard.
Oh, my God. Speaking of Meatball, we received a review recently where someone recommended that I be replaced or that we be joined by a third co-host. And I can say this much. I mean, Paige and I are engaged, so I'm not going fucking anywhere. However, we've really taken that suggestion to heart, and we're going to be welcoming Meatball on as an official third co-host.
Meatball!
You know, he's pretty quiet, but every once in a while, he'll chime in.
He's sitting on the bed with us while we record, and Meatball, he'll chime in if he has any thoughts.
Yeah, so now they're officially three hosts, so that's how you
And also,
it.
Fuck that person that wrote that review. How dare.
Yeah, no,
how dare you try and remove Alex, the only other host. If you are removed, it's just me. Like,
well, I think they wanted me replaced with someone else.
Oh, well, fuck that. With who? Like, honestly... fuck off. Well, you know what? I feel like this episode's going to be especially long. Maybe I'm wrong, but there is just so much fucking shit to unpack. Like, not like unpack, but just so many great things about this episode. And overall, season 2 has just absolutely blown season 1 out of the water. Like, it's like a completely different
hands down
show. Don't you agree? Like, the quality is just out the fucking roof.
I adore season two.
This is better.
Was like, season one for me is like a six. Like, it's interesting, and it was interesting to discuss and like dissect in a podcast format, but I never like really like loved it or even liked it that much. Season two, I'm like hooked on. Like, this is like an amazing show that I'd be watching no matter what, and be,
yeah,
like, a huge fan of.
Also, I feel like
it's fantastic,
and I really mean this. I feel like Euphoria is more eligible for an Oscar than most of the movies nominated for Oscars.
Dude,
this
the
year.
Oscar noms this year fucking suck.
They really do.
They've sucked for many years, so it's not a surprise.
I really think Euphoria has a. I mean, actually, I'll say I think they have it in the bag. I feel like they are going to win like every Emmy. Like, how could they not?
What fucking show is better? Like,
literally nothing.
I mean, this is a good time for TV. There's a lot of good shows, but I don't think anything has been better this year than Euphoria.
No. No. So, Emmys, here we come.
Yeah.
Well, the theater and its double. Alex, does this title have any meaning?
Yes.
Or is it just literally like the play? I mean, I saw a lot of doubles.
No,
I wasn't like that drunk. Like, there were a lot of doubles.
Based on... Yeah,
it wasn't that tipsy.
I don't think it's that surface level. So based on my incredibly detailed Wikipedia research, it's the name of a collection of essays by a French poet named Antonin Artaud.
Wow, Alex. Great pronunciation.
You know I just absolutely butchered that pronunciation.
Oh, wow. You did your best.
Antonin Artaud. anyways, he wrote a collection of essays about the theater, and the general conceit of his work was that people need to think of the theater as a holistic, sensual experience, and need to appreciate the primacy of the experience and everything surrounding it, as opposed to more of a formal, like, theatrical form.
Interesting.
So he was, you know, about the... He was about the totality of the experience over following the established norms of the theater, I guess.
Got it. Which Lexi absolutely embodied.
According to Wikipedia, he was about the urgency of expression over the complacency on the part of the audience.
So in other words, he was all for Ethan jizzing all over the crowd.
He attacked what he believed to be an elitism of the irrelevant, outdated, literary/theatrical canon.
Did you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Well, you didn't comment. You just kept reading, and I'm like, hello, did you hear?
Well,
I just said,
I
wouldn't he be Team
Perfect.
Ethan?
Yes, exactly. A great example.
A big dick and balls on stage. Like, it sounds like this guy would have been about it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think that was what it was. This was a, this play was a great
out-of-body experience.
I'm sure old Antonin would have loved this play.
What's
you
his
know?
Name? Antonio?
Antonin?
Oh.
Antonin?
Okay, Antonin.
Yeah, he probably would have loved this shit.
Wow. The theater and its double. I mean, it also has to be about, like, all the doubles, though, right? There were so many, like, I was getting confused. Like,
I don't think it's actually a reference to
okay. I wasn't actually getting confused.
But I guess that is that's an additional, like, reference, I suppose. Yeah, like, I
it
guess
has to be.
It works on that level as well. Like, yeah, I mean, everyone, it's an episode of Doppelgangers.
Yeah, which is great. I like, too, how after when you watch the behind-the-scenes little clip, you know, on HBO, how they were talking about the cast was, like, super stoked to watch, like, their doppelgangers. Mm-hmm. That's cute. Because that would be really weird.
Yep.
You see, like, someone dressed exactly like you from season one, like, playing your part.
Yeah. And as we predicted, Ethan is portraying Nate.
I know. And everyone else. And everyone in the play.
As well as, like, Suze and a photographer and...
So many other people.
Others. Yeah, he was amazing.
I love the beginning of the episode, how they did the little, like, overture.
The overture. So classy. Love that.
It was really pretty.
It was nice.
But yeah, overall, just, like, wow. Lexi was typing away. She was missing, like, parties and, like, you know, she wasn't really hanging at the birthday party. She missed out on that, but she was writing this play, and boy, did her hard work pay off.
It certainly did.
And
I mean,
like,
this was a smash hit.
Were you laughing at that tweet I showed you earlier where it was like Euphoria would really be lying about the arts and their budget,
mm-hmm.
like, which is accurate because this play was, like, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, this was a hell of a production.
It was so good. Ugh.
But I think that that's kind of like one of the things that's made the season great is that, I mean, it was always present in season one that they would kind of like go off on these like fantastical tangents. But,
yeah.
Season two's like really leaned into that hardcore. And I think it's really worked in their favor. It's just given them so much opportunity to play with like the style and structure of everything.
Yep.
And it just feels like it's like constantly like, it's just like so fun to watch because it's constantly like evolving and
maturing in a way, but like,
and
yeah,
shifting. Like no episode is like any other episode.
No, it's so well done. Like the lighting, just everything, every shot is like a piece of art. It's crazy. Like the whole time I was watching this episode, I was thinking like, God, to have like the, just the mind of like Marcel and Sam and to plan all these shots. I mean,
yeah, I think they did especially well in this episode with the way they were constantly shifting between the play, reality,
yeah,
and like memories and doing like those seamless shifts. It was
so
done
hard
so
to
like
do.
Imaginatively.
Yeah.
In such like fun, interesting ways, and it just like flowed very well. And it never was like clunky or like weird.
No, never abrupt. It all like flowed so, so well. And there were times where literally, like when I was joking earlier, like obviously I wasn't seeing double, but like it was done so well in that like 1 minute it's, you know, Cassie, the next minute it's Cassie's doppelganger, but you don't even know because it just like flows so well. But this whole episode was just beautiful. I really liked seeing like the moms in the funeral scene where like they're at the house. Like I thought that was interesting because like there's just so many different layers of euphoria that you like forget about. Even like something as small as like Leslie and Suze being in the same exact position, like single moms unexpectedly. It was just like little moments like that. That's where like the euphoria nerd in me, like my heart just like, oh, like I just love it because I don't know. I just love all the connections.
I think the real like euphoria nerd moments here, a lot came between like the Lexi and Rue relationship.
Yes.
Because you get a look at like this middle period where they're still like best friends and are still like hanging out and very close before like they've kind of
drifted apart
more
a bit.
Distant. But it's after the death of Rue's father when she's like getting into drugs and stuff. And that was an interesting look into, like, that period of their relationship that we really haven't seen before.
Never seen. Like, in season one, you're almost like, how are these two even best friends?
Right, like how are they ever best friends?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you're almost
you
like, I get it.
Like, more like they must have just been, like, best
childhood
friends when they were, like, kids. And so it was interesting to see them a little older.
Yeah, and I love the funeral scene when she's in her bedroom reading her that poem. I just thought that scene was so sweet. Like, so, like, pure for euphoria. Like, just a little moment of, like, wholesomeness, like,
but also like very like dark and realistic that it ends with Lexi being like, I realized I would never be able to comfort her as much as drugs, and just being able to like recognize that,
foreshadow
that at a young age is like crazy. But like sometimes you just know that stuff, you're just like, damn, like
yeah, like I'm not gonna help out here.
Yeah,
but also shows how mature Lexi was from such a young age, and like we've always said, like such an observer, but also like so far ahead of all the other characters in the show, just in terms of like not only maturity, but I liked how in this episode we really get to see like her side of the story, like what she was experiencing while all these other characters were kind of like living their high school life. Lexi was really going through some tough shit, and you don't get to see that in season one at all. Like if anything, you kind of don't even think about her. I mean, you and I were, because we're, like, nerds for Lexi. Like, we love Maude. But just generally, she's very much, like, a background character in season one, I would say.
Yeah, and I think one of the best, like, things about this episode, kind of on that same page, is that it challenges everything you already thought you knew about Cassie. I mean, she turned into a real villain this season, but last season, we never really viewed her that way. And not to say that she's a villain in light of this episode, but every, like, she's completely recontextualized based on this as someone that was completely, like, oblivious to what was going on around her, someone that, like, was unaware of what her sister was going through and, like, kind of uncaring.
Yeah. Which
so
is hard. The only thing that's hard about that, though, is I will say, like, having sisters myself, I do feel like, though, this is very common with older sister versus younger sister, which is, in all fairness, Cassie looks up to Lexi. Whether or not she shows it, it's clear that she's always had in her head that Lexi has it together. She's
but
fine.
Lexi's the older sister.
Cassie's older?
Cassie's older, yeah.
Are Cassie's you sure?
Younger sister. Yeah, stop. They said it in this episode. Cassie hits puberty first, and Lexi's like, "I was counting the days. It was like 430 days until like I was there." Like,
oh wow.
Cassie's the younger sister.
Okay, I'm having a total like moment. God, everyone's gonna make fun of me now. Everyone's gonna slam me. We went through this in season one.
You know what's funny is we did this once in season one. Yes. We said it, and I was like, no, I think Lexi's like the younger sister.
But in all fairness, the reason I think that is because Lexi's so fucking on top of her shit that I assume she...
No, it's understandable.
She takes quite literally, like figuratively, she takes the older sister role.
She gives off she gives off the eldest sibling vibe. 100%.
Not just because of her maturity, just their relationship is very much how I see me and my sisters. Like, I'm the oldest of both my sisters, and what I was going to say is a lot of times your younger siblings, without realizing it, can become selfish because they think that you just have it all together. Everything's fine. But I guess that's not this scenario because, like you said, I was wrong. I got their ages off even though we just watched a play about it.
The dynamic's the same, though. The one is more put together and the other one's a little sloppy.
Yeah, so she doesn't really, like, you know, dig too deep into her sister's life because she just thinks she's got it all together. Little does Cassie know, like, Lexi's been going through it just the same, if anything. Like, same if not more.
Yeah. And she doesn't have the privilege of acting like everything's okay and having everyone dote on her and, you know, like this, like, rosy worldview.
And she jokes, right? Like, the whole sitcom-y parts of this are, like, her joking about physical appearance. Like, Cassie always had it all. Like, she hit puberty, she has, like, she's got, like, the quote-unquote knockers, like... She's got all the guys going after her.
Quote-unquote.
Well, on the play, yeah, they laugh about it. But, like, you know what I mean. Like, she had it all going on, and Lexi, like, bloomed later in life. Lexi had her braces and was kind of just, like, kicking it, getting mustaches drawn on her by Rue and Fesco.
That was pretty funny. It was, hey, we got to see the inspiration for the Bob Ross costume.
We do. I loved that. That was so, like, creative and cute.
That's pretty funny that it comes from that moment.
I know. I really love that. And
passed out.
Full circle.
It's also so funny that, like, Fez was, like, in her life before this. Like,
I know.
You kind of, like, get the impression they just, like, really, like, met at the party. You didn't really, like...
Understand that.
Yeah, you didn't really, like, grasp that they had, like, known each other, like, a little bit before.
I think they all have, you know? I think that's what the season is kind of showing us, is that they all, like, have kind of intertwined at some point and have had side relationships. Season one just didn't, like, have to showcase all that, which is fine. Like, that's just life. But I also loved, I'm kind of, like, skipping ahead, but I did love when they showed Lexi and Rue, like, when Lexi was trying weed the first time. I think a lot of people, not you and I particularly, but a lot of my friends can, like, relate to this, where weed is just not for everybody. Like, some people just, like, it's such a vibe, it's peaceful, it can be an escape, it can be a high, like, quite literally a high. For others, it's, like, paranoia, anxiety, like, it's just not a good vibe.
You just need to try a different strain, bro.
Is that what people say?
That's, like, the classic joke.
Really?
Like, any stoner that hears that someone doesn't like weed is always like, no, bro, you just need to try, like, a different strain. Like, you were just smoking, like, the wrong stuff. Like, you should just try indica instead of sativa.
It's like no, some people just don't vibe on it, and that's fine. Like, it's not for everybody. And I also think... If I were to argue my side of weed, my side is that sometimes you just have to be in another place in your life. Meaning, like, if you have a lot of anxiety, it might not be the time for weed. Or it might be the perfect time for it. It really just depends.
Yeah. Or maybe, like, I mean, sometimes you just need to have, like, an appetite for exploration and, like, trying things multiple times and, like, playing with, like, your environmental factors to see if it, like, works. But, like, yeah, of course, it just might not be for everybody and, like, whatever.
Liked that they, like... put a highlight on that, though, because I think a lot of times the ideas around weed are, like, everyone should like it. It's, like, this vibey thing. So I thought it was interesting that
Is why she probably wasn't smoking with Fez in the last episode.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. So the Stand By Me scene, I thought she was getting high, but she probably was not.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think she just
really she talked about how she really didn't like it.
I think it feels very... Stand By Me probably feels very personal to her in light of the play.
Yeah.
Especially since, like, they open it with the same line from Stand By Me about how, like...
Oh, they did? I didn't catch that.
The episode... Early in the episode, they say, like, the classic line, which is, like, when you're, like... 11 or whatever, like, you think your friends, your best friends are going to be, like, your friends for, like, your entire life or
whatever. Got
Something
it.
like that. Like, they're the best friends you'll ever have, whatever. I forget the exact
Yeah,
line,
it's okay.
But, like, that's the famous
Alex,
line.
Oh, seriously, can you do your homework and know the lines of every part of Euphoria, God, please?
I know. I really am so ill-prepared.
I love when Cassie comes down as an angel in that, like, circle thing.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
It's so funny. Lexi did such a good job on this play. Like, it just so perfectly portrays every character and their flaws.
Right.
And
that's a big reason why I liked season two, because season two is very much like the suffering and like lampooning of the characters that are more like glamorized or idolized in season one.
Yes, agreed. But also, can we just like take a moment too to just love Miss Howard's reactions to everything in this play?
Yeah, I think the reactions of the different characters are very interesting.
They are. But Miss Howard should have had wine in a bag at the show. That would
have
made it.
Yeah, that would have been true to character.
It really would have.
Yeah, I love that she's like hype on it. I also really liked I think it speaks a lot to Rue and Lexi's friendship that Rue immediately gets it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the whole play opens with like the death of her father and like a very like personal intimate moment, and she's never like put off the whole time. Rue's very like into it, and like she smiles through like
the
whole thing.
Oh, wait,
the
third co-host has something to say about that. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on
Meatball,
this?
Meatball, what are you saying about Rue?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yes, tell me more.
Oh, okay. Right, the
cool,
co-host has exited.
He only chimes in briefly, but you know, there's a big impact.
He said, "I love Rue." Okay.
No, he didn't. Don't make him sound like a dummy. He's far smarter than that.
Well, anyways, yes, I agree with you. I thought it was super sweet and like so wholesome that Rue just the whole time had like a little smile on her face. Like, she really, it was very heartfelt. Like, I think if anything, it was showing that once again their friendship that we didn't know about. Meaning, I think deep down she was like rooting for Lexi. Like, in other words, maybe a part of her too. I don't know if you were thinking this. I was like, I bet, you know, sometimes you have that friendship in your life that you just like adore and love, but you kind of take it for granted. Like, you don't really like see it for what it is, and then sometimes it takes a moment. Something happens in your life where you're like, fuck, this person's like so important to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be better about showing it. I feel like that's what Rue is feeling. I've gone through that myself where like nothing's ever like gone wrong with you and a friend, but you just might have that moment where you're like, fuck, I need to be better. Like, this is like someone that like is my ride or die, like would be there for me through anything. And like Lexi's kind of showing that on stage.
Yeah, I think it also just, like, kind of speaks to the fact that, like, Rue, like, really gets her. Like, Rue understands where she's coming from, and, like, Lexi was so worried about everyone, like, misinterpreting her intentions throughout all of this. And I think Rue immediately, like, grasps her intentions, and that they're not bad, and, like, Rue is totally cool with it, whereas everyone else is, like, wondering, and, like, also I think Rue, like, really doesn't have much of an ego, obviously, given what she's been through. So she's not really worried about how she comes off on stage as well, which probably helps.
Well, also, they even talk about it when they're on the roof of the gas station, which is a super cute, like, little memory. But Rue says, like, my dad taught me, like, I forget the exact quote, so I'm going to butcher it. But, you know, where she was like, my dad said...
He says, I'd never want to be part of a club that would accept me as a member.
Yeah, because then I wouldn't be, like, cool. So I feel like that's also, like, Rue's vibe while watching the play. Like, she doesn't give a fuck that it's, like, personal and stuff. Like,
Right.
But, yeah, so love that. I also kind of love the little, like, Rue and Jules exchanges. I thought those were kind of sweet, too, because they weren't, like, angry or anything, but it was kind of, like, Rue was definitely looking at Jules to get, like, hey, you seeing this? Do you feel bad for me?
Like, well,
I kind of
feel
bad for me.
It.
More like, oh, like, come on, like, cut me some slack, like, you know, I don't know.
I kind of thought about it more like a lot of like what was being said on stage between Lexi and Rue. Rue was feeling in, like, in real life in the moment towards Jules. Like, there was a lot of talk about like them being like best friends and having these like intense like lifelong friend relationships. And
yeah,
Rue was looking at Jules during a lot of that. So I think a lot of like what in the past applied to Lexi and Rue, maybe as they're growing older, is now applying more to Rue and Jules potentially.
Oh, interesting.
And that they were kind of like, it seemed like most of the times when they showed that, it was because there was some mention of like some kind of like deep friendship, and they were like kind of, I felt like they were like taking what was being on stage and applying it to themselves in that moment.
Okay, be honest. What were your thoughts on the scene, though, where Rue talks about Jules in the bathroom and is like, I don't know, I used to think, like, she was my one and only. We were, like, this forever deal, and now, like, I'm not thinking that anymore. That really, like, stabbed me in the heart, because I thought during the play, I thought Rue's reaction to the play was kind of in relation to how she was feeling about Jules, like you were just saying. But in the bathroom, she was kind of like, I don't know anymore. That makes me so sad.
I don't know. I think it's, like, too early to say, because realistically, Jules didn't really do anything. Rue is just clearly still feeling bitter about the intervention, because she even called it, like, the bullshit intervention and stuff. So she's obviously in a place where she's very, like, bitter about the intervention still. So I think it makes sense that she's, like, talking about Jules in that way. But I don't think that that's, like, true. Like, Jules didn't actually, like, betray her or do anything, like, so fucked up. So I don't know that those feelings are gonna, like, really, like, hold over or are, like, serious or deep. I think it's more, like, in the moment.
Well, let's talk about the cutest part, which is also Fez and Lexi with their little cute phone exchange. Which is Lexi's
amazing, like, roller skate lamp.
Her what? I'm
obsessed with it. She has that amazing lamp with that roller skate. It's so cool.
Oh, I didn't even catch that. No, I was going to say the cuteness of the phone conversations between her and Fez. That's so, like...
Yes, very cute.
So intimate and sweet and, like, innocent, but... I like how also Maude in the, like, after the show recap was, like... Fez and I have, like, a really chill relationship outside of this, so it was, or Angus and I do.
Yeah, so it was really easy to film. Tom Brown shows together, looking fly as hell.
I know, they're so great, awesome. But I just liked that they have such good chemistry, and she's right, she's like, even in real life, we're, like, so different, but we're also so much the same, so it's, like, the same in Euphoria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really cute. I mean, she's just really using, like, she's really using Fez as, like, a sounding board for her, like, classic, like, artistic concerns. Like, every artist has the, like, questions about, are they good enough, like, how will people react, like, will, is this gonna piss people off, am I being true to myself, like, you know. Yeah. all the classic questions, and Fez is kind of acting as her, like, sounding board as she, like, worries about all these things and, like, figures out the final form that her play is gonna take and what to include and not include. And
but also he's like, I mean, can you repeat that question again?
I know. Hilarious.
He's like, hi. He's like, sorry, can you say that again? But he's so sweet.
But that's good, because it, like, causes her, it, like, forces her to, like, really, like, reconsider what the actual question is and what she's, like, truly concerned about in those moments, and, like, make the tough decisions about what she's going to do with her project.
For sure. I just absolutely died when Fez was getting ready for the play, which, of course, we're all, like, super scared because we have no idea what's to come, but...
Adorable.
I literally like, squealed.
Steaming his shirt for him.
I squealed when he said, dude, what did he say? He's like, I think I look handsome, or, like, he said something so cute. He was like,
she said that he looked handsome, and he was like, do you think other people will think I look handsome?
Oh, yes, you're right! Oh my god, I literally, like, squealed. It made me so, like, overjoyed, but, like, so...
Yeah, very cute. I really, really hope that Faye does the right thing, comes out on the right end of this, because they've taken such good care of her, and she clearly feels bad about the whole thing.
She does, because she's grown close with them. They're Netflix and chilling, like, every day.
I feel bad that, I don't know, I'm worried, though, because she had her chance in the room with Fez to tell him, and she didn't do it, so I'm like, oof.
My prediction is she won't save them, but she won't, like, out them either. I think she's gonna play the classic, like, middleman, like, pretend like she's kind of just, you know, we'll not see. Pretend, but just be aloof and be like, fuck, you know, I'm we'll just see. Kind of in or the maybe middle
she'll,
of this.
Maybe she'll flip on costume.
Maybe she'll be the hero.
I don't know.
She posted a post today that said, I put the hero in heroine. I feel like maybe she's the hero in season finale.
Okay.
It was, like, a fashion post, but I was like, oh, okay. I was thinking, that's why I thought this episode they might reveal that she, like, saves them. Because I was like, why would she say that, you know?
I don't know. We'll see.
I know. I also definitely want to point out the scene with Lexi and Cassie and their dad. I feel like that was so perfectly done. Like, props to Sam for writing that part in, because... like we said earlier, it's so, like, crazy that in season one, that scene's so innocent. You watch that and you think they had a great day of ice cream with their dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything goes awry like a week later. But really, it was already so fucked. But we only got Cassie's perspective, which was super innocent and like, daddy's everything. Like,
yeah, totally.
Just sad daddy issues.
Which makes sense because she's like on display in this episode are like the full like extent of her daddy issues with Nate, where she's literally like, control my life, tell me what to eat, tell me how to speak. Like,
I know.
Oh, it's so cringy.
It's cringy, pathetic. But it's also
it's sad, but it's
sad. I was gonna say, I still have a ton of empathy for Cassie. Like, I will make that very clear. I will say it on the stand right now before fucking listeners come for my throat. I'm still here for Cassie. Like, I'm still rooting for her, but when I say I'm rooting for her, it doesn't mean I condone what she's doing. She's a piece of shit right now. She's doing, like, so much harm to so many people around her, not just Maddie. Like, literally everyone in this episode has, like, been dissed by Cassie in some shape or form. So I'm not here for her, but I do absolutely, like, empathize with her situation. It's very clear why she's where she is right now. Could not be more obvious. And it is sad, and it's going to take, I thought in this episode, though, I thought, oh, the play's really going to, like, wake her up. But she's not woke. She is looking like a real clown.
There were some...
She was acting like the Joker in the mirror when she was, like, smiling and then, like, crying. I was like... Which, by the way, amazing acting. Like, so well done. But also, like, she is losing her... She just continually loses her goddamn mind.
There were a few, like, horror movie moments throughout this episode. That being one of them. Nate, like, looking at himself in the mirror, but it's, like, the back. It's, like, he's, like, staring at his own back. Like,
yeah, that was creepy.
Super creepy, and then also...
Very David Lynch-y to me, too. Like, some parts of it.
That was all, like, horror shit. And then also, like, Cassie at the end, like, that was total horror shit.
Where, like, she was, like, breathing through the window,
yeah.
Yeah, or the door, like, window.
Yeah, I mean, we thought she was gonna... We thought Maddie was gonna kill her. I think Cassie's gonna kill fucking everyone. She's about to go, like, school shooter on everyone.
She really is. Like, she's fully lost it. And like I said, I thought the play, if anything, would kind of... I don't know. It makes me sad, though, because she got up and left, right? So it shows that she does have a heart... It's just really buried.
It shows that she's pissed. It doesn't necessarily mean she feels bad about it.
Yeah, but I think... No, but I think she went into the bathroom crying... But then the mana kicked in. It's like, it's like deep, deep down. It's so far down, though, now. She's so lost.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she's, like, pure evil like Nate or anything.
No.
But she's pretty...
No, but she's far past the point of, like, being resurrected this season. Like, we just have to accept that Cassie's not, like, she's not gonna have this big comeback this season. She's not even gonna come close, if anything.
Yeah,
she's gonna be, like, the person that we hate the
most.
She's
obviously going to blow shit up in the next episode.
Well, especially when Maddie's, once again, being the knocking,
knocking extremist.
Extremist on the door again. I was thinking that whole time, wow, we still are gaining nothing from Cassie in terms of, like, remorse. Like, we're getting nothing.
No.
She could have taken that moment, because Maddie said some
After
things that were
deep
really...
deep look at their friendship.
It's also, we're really, like I said, Maddie is evolving, like, so much. Because even in that moment, Maddie took the mature route. She was like, this is not about Nate. This is about our fucking friendship. Like, yeah, I would have never done this to you.
Yeah.
I also like that once again showed that Maddie also is a character that's gone through a lot, meaning, like, they're like, she had to live at Cassie's house for a month because her parents were fighting and had, like, a horrible fallout. Remember, they showed in season one her dad's just, like, a deadbeat. So it's like, there's a lot of history there. So this isn't just like, oh, your homie at school. This is someone that, like, lived with you, like, was like a sister to you, like, really, like, relied on you as family, and you did this. So this isn't just like some petty bullshit. This is fuckery its finest.
Oh, yeah. Cassie's, like, just bad.
She's making Maddie look like Jesus Christ himself.
I know. We've like, discussed it at length, but it just continues to get worse the more we see.
I thought the scene was so beautiful, too, of Cassie and her dad dancing. Just all four of them as a family dancing. It makes you sad because, once again, you feel
dancing
empathy.
With Ethan. Another role.
And then it flashes to Lexi and Ethan, which is hilarious.
Yeah, that was great.
But I liked it because, yet again, we just kind of see, like, how broken a lot of these characters are due to, like, their family situations. And even Miss Howard in the audience, like, sobbing. Like, it's just sad.
Yeah, of course. I also, I really liked the scene with Lexi, on a totally different note, I liked the scene with Lexi talking about how evil big tech is, after having worked in tech for, like, almost 10 years, I'm like, yes, accurate. Like,
same. We both are work in tech.
Yeah, I've avoided the major villains, but, yeah, they're, it's, she's spot on, that's all I'll say. Yeah.
Once again, more mature than everyone else, sees the bigger picture. Even though she's the younger sister, now I know.
Yeah, we're not too far off from Killer Robots.
Yeah, and I will just say it. I don't care who comes for my throat for this. I mean, Cassie's wardrobe and hair and everything in this episode. It's just like, girl, you are not pulling off the Maddie look even a little bit. Like, Maddie really does, like, own that type of look. Like, she does.
Right.
But for Cassie, it's a no. It's a no for me, dog. Right. It's not working.
Right.
It's just not working.
I agree. Most of the time on Maddie, it's, like, not my taste, but, like, it's not, like, it's not generally, like, heinous. Every once in a while, I think she looks Las Vegas, but, like,
but it fits her personality and her confidence.
Cassie just looks, like, hot garbage. Like,
also, she gets... when Nate's putting on that necklace, you even said out loud during the episode, we were laughing. We're like, so she's just going to wear Maddie's Tiffany necklace?
Yep.
She just doesn't care. She's like, whatever.
I mean, Nate doesn't care. Like, this whole time, like, I've been saying Nate doesn't care about her, and, like, it, sure enough, at the end of this episode, he's just like, move out. Like.
Okay. So, you know, it was horror for me.
Care, move out.
Of all scenes, can you guess what my most horrific scene was? No? I was going to see if you could guess it. So, for me, pure horror was this really well-done scene where Nate is making out with Cassie, who then turns into Jules in the mirror, and that's creepy. Like, that look Jules has on her face, like, it's really, like, she doesn't look stoked. Like, she looks scared.
Yeah, well, it's, like, the recreation of the cow.
I know, but I'm saying that scene was really, like... I have so many thoughts. I feel like we'll get more into that later because we have a change our mind that was submitted that kind of goes along with that scene. Yes. So I'm going to hold, but I'm just going to put it out there. That for me was what you were describing when you say like horror David Lynch vibes. Like that was really well done. Like Jules in the mirror was creepy. I was like, ew, I hate this. Like him ripping her tights and like all that. That was like really well done.
Yeah. Yep.
So other than that scene being absolutely horrific, I hate the flashes all throughout the episode of Fesco's chair at the show being empty. It just makes me like...
Ugh. Heartbreaking.
I can't. Like, I don't want to see the season finale because I'm so fucking scared.
Yeah, right. Especially because we know from the previews of the next episode the that cops things do not come. Go well.
So the cops come. They show like a fucking SWAT team entering the building.
And I'm sure it's not just somebody getting arrested. Like... there's probably somebody's gonna get shot. So the question is, who's getting shot and are they dying or not? I think that's where we're at. If no one gets shot, I'll be shocked.
Well, that kind of leads us into like the whole Fesco ashtray situation. And
yeah, Faye. I mean, there's not too much to say about this. Custer's a bitch ass. Ashtray is like, as always watching. I have to say, like, huge props to the actor that plays Ashtray, because he really brings like the menace, like to be a little kid who can intimidate like grown men is like
very admirable.
I mean, that's tough, and he like absolutely brings it. Like, he is like intimidating. Like,
he's also like a fighter in real life, though. Like, in his real life, have you seen that on social media?
Yeah.
It's cute. So maybe he brings some of that like mean face, like fighting.
If I had to sit across the fucking table from Homeboy and he was interrogating me, like I would be scared. Like, he is like an intimidating dude. Like, so he does a really good job. He's fucking menacing as hell. Like,
agreed. He's intimidating, and we were joking that he looks like he's wearing a juicy tracksuit though.
Oh yeah.
He's sure. Always wearing those little tracksuits, like the sweats,
like the click, you know. Juicy tracksuit, no punch facts. But yeah, he does a really good job. I mean, he's a killer. He fucking killed Mouse. Like, he killed a man. He killed a big, scary man. He killed the scariest character in all of season one. Scarier than Nate and Cal. Mouse was so scary, and this little boy, like, killed him.
I know. And beat the fuck out of Cal. Like,
and
he's a baller.
Shit, like.
But also, can we talk about... So, I'm trying to understand. So, Custer... he threw something in the planter. What was that? Just a recording device?
Custer's
a wire?
Working with the cops.
I know, but was that like a wire or what the fuck was it?
I didn't see that, but I believe you. He probably just threw a mic in there.
It looked like a little like USB, and he like threw it.
It's probably a mic. I'm sure it's a mic. He threw a mic in there.
Well, he put threw it because then the Faye looked at it and thought about taking it out or doing something, and she didn't.
Yeah,
and then
that's why. That's why I'm like, yeah, I agree.
But then I was mad because then Ashley gets up and has his knife out, and I was thinking, thank God he saw that he dropped something there, and he didn't. He walked right by it, and I was like, damn it.
No, he didn't see it. And, you know, he puts his phone on the table really deliberate, which is probably, like, recording or doing something. He's obviously, like, setting them up with the fucking feds, so.
Oh, yeah, I'm heartbroken when Fesco's, like, has the roses.
Fesco's a real bitch, you know? They took good care of his girl for months. Like, they really set her up. They've been smoking her out, watching movies, and giving her sandwiches and cokes and stuff. Like,
fuck him.
Fuck him for betraying
them. He's dead to me.
Fucking rat.
Absolutely dead to me.
Stupid ass name, Custer.
But yeah, I'm terrified for the season finale. I also didn't think that we were going to be left hanging this whole to be continued. I thought the season finale was going to be like, play's over, like, let's move on.
Yeah, same.
So I'm kind of like, holy shit, we don't even know what's to come.
They're giving us a real two-parter here.
I know, which is good. I like that because it's kind of like literally similar to the theme. They're like keeping on with like theater. It's like intermission, then we've gotta fucking wait.
Except for
we have to wait a fucking week.
This isn't
like grab your popcorn and some cooks. It's like we actually have to wait a fucking week. It's gonna suck. Hell?
Yeah.
So what else? What's next? I mean, I know we already I'm going back and forth, but this whole episode is back and forth. I forgot to mention this is so random, but I really, really loved Lexi being like hot and wearing that little dress and doing that walking along that revolving like
mm-hmm.
and being like, hey boys, hey.
Yeah, like, everyone's like, ooh shit.
Yeah, like, okay, Lexi, like, let's go.
And that one guy's like, man, I really wish I fucked Lexi in high school.
Oh, that part was really cute.
Yeah,
I also liked that they showed Lexi behind the stage being super aggro and finally having a voice, being like, like, theater was her way of, like, speaking her mind, being like, no, fuck you, like, do what I say, like, the lights better be perfect or I'm replacing you. Like, she really just was like...
She's a professional. She's a boss-ass bitch. She's running a whole play. And, you know, if you're not like that with a high school play, it's gonna turn out like shit, you know? You gotta be all these people. They've got fucking Steven or whatever up in the sound booth, like, blowing it with the lights.
That was really funny, though. She's like, we're gonna replace you.
Yeah, fucking.
She's like, with who? And she's like, with anyone.
I know, I love that.
Savage scene between Leslie and Rue. Not like, I mean, in a good way, meaning I think she's giving her what she needs to as a mother, which is a little bit of tough love. Like,
even aside from like whatever she's giving to Rue, I think this is her stepping up and like basically being like, I'm not going to be a bad mom. Like, it's depressing, but she's at the place in her life where she really has to, like, you know, take stock of things and view things in the most, like, objective, like, harsh, like, pragmatic way, which is, like, I have two daughters, I can lose both of them, or I can lose one of them. Like, she's really at that place, like, she's, like, military shit. It's, like, we have to, like, cut the losses, we have to, like, lose some men to, like, save, like, more men, like...
Yeah, and also...
She's gotta fucking lose Rue to save Gia, otherwise she loses them both.
And it's
like, that's just a flat-out, like... hardcore business decision that you have to make, and it fucking sucks.
But it's tragic, but it's also like, the minute she was like, Rue, you know what, you can do whatever drugs you want, there is a light in Rue's eyes. Like, even though I know she's kind of like, she knows her mom's just playing her a bit,
yeah, of course.
but there definitely is a little light, like, I can. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not, like we said last episode, I'm saying maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. But I think this will continue into season 3. She is not anywhere close to wanting to be clean.
No. Although I think this might help. I think this is a better tactic than she's been doing, because I feel like Rue definitely relies. Rue's never really been like fully cut loose. She's always kind of had to push against something to do these drugs. And I think that that's kind of like invigorated her.
Yes.
Obviously, she really loves doing the drugs, and I don't think it's like going to fix everything. But just having the freedom to completely, like, do drugs and be, like, fully destitute really might wake her up to the reality of what that looks like when no one is, like, giving a shit. And
well, it's kind of like the rebellious teen act. Like, right, you know.
Like, what's your life like when no one brings you home and gives you, like, a bed and you're, like, really on the streets? Like, you're really, if you are living that life, like, you're really going to be sleeping on the streets. So, like,
yeah.
She's never really had that because there's always someone that brings her home and gives her, like, food and love and, you know, yeah. comfort.
Also, so petty and so off topic, but what the fuck is Leslie eating out of that little tin can? It looks like oatmeal or beans, like when she's talking to her. Were you watching that? And it's like,
no, I thought it was ice cream
mush. No, it was out of like a tin can. It looked like a Campbell's soup can.
No,
she was
eating,
like,
sure, ice cream.
No,
100% she's eating ice cream.
All right, Euphorians, come at us. Let us know, what was Rue's mom eating? To me, it looked like clam chowder in a can, and Alex thinks it's ice cream.
Nah, she eating ice cream for sure.
No way, that stuff looked nasty. It looked like tuna in a can.
Ew, no. I mean, well, I mean, not ew. Tuna in a can's delicious.
I also low-key loved the moment of Maddie, like, them portraying Maddie, and, like, Lexi and her kind of bonding for a minute. Not bonding, but, like, her kind of telling Maddie telling Lexi... The cooks is kicking in. Maddie telling Lexi, like, how she goes about confidence, how it's, like, 90%, like, fake, pretty much. Like,
yeah, I mean, she's not wrong. Again, like, Maddie does bring the hood wisdom sometimes. Like, she's not wrong. I mean, you really just, like, fake it till you make it is, like...
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
I mean, it's bullshit that, like, there's not a... That people can't tell the difference. The smart people can tell the difference between fake confidence and real confidence, but... Most people can't, so, you know, you'll get pretty fucking far.
But I liked how she described Maddie. I just thought that was cute. Cause she wasn't, like, harsh about it. Like we said, like, I think I thought going into this that she was just gonna, like, drop the hammer on everyone and go, like, so hard. I feel like Lexi did this in such a tactful way that was, like, ways harsh, but not, like, conniving or mean. It was very, honest.
Yeah, it was just honest. Yeah, she's, like, just being she's being a real artist. She's just showing things how
they were.
Like, all, you know, warts and all. The ugly side and the good side of everyone. And, you know, some people, Cassie and Nate, can't fucking handle, like, being faced with, like, the reality of who they are. Whereas I think people like Maddie can see a portrayal like this and see, like, the truth in it, and I don't think she's gonna be, like, furious at Lexi after this, because, like, you know, she doesn't come off looking amazing, but it's a pretty honest portrayal, and she doesn't come off looking horrible either.
Do you think Sydney Sweeney's wearing a wig, or do you think that's her real hair?
Hair.
I know it's so irrelevant, but oh my god, her hair is so straight and, like, scary looking.
Yeah, I think real hair.
You think so?
It's so flat. I feel like it'd be hard for that
it's
to be
a wig. It's, like, glued to, like, her face. It's so flat.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm heartbroken over the Cassie and Maddie situation, because I do feel like...
Are you heartbroken, Paige? Are you losing sleep over it?
I actually am. I love their friendship.
I'm just shitting on you, but...
No, I know. I mean, I'm sorry. Can shit on me all you want. Alex, you're being such a douche.
Yeah, that's me.
You're being so condescending right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm kidding. But in season one, like, I don't know, I just love, like, the carnival, like, how they're like, bitch, you're my soulmate, like, we're in this forever, like, kind of vibe. So yeah, my heart breaks. It's sad. And I do feel, oh man, can I tell you, I think a lot of girls have felt what Maddie feels on the other side of that door in this scene, which is, like, just pure betrayal. Like, if you ever go through this with anyone in a cheating situation, sometimes, like, what she said, it's the truth. Sometimes it's not even about, like, the act. It's, like, the emotions behind it, like, the history. Like, it was really, it's tough, like, if you've been through anything like that, to watch that, because you're like, yeah, like, that's real. Like, I think I felt the most empathy toward Maddie I've ever felt in any season in this moment, because she's like, you know, I haven't had the best life. And, like, yeah, Nate was a fuck, but, like, I liked him, I made a mistake, but why the fuck did you have to go in and, like, steal the one thing, like, the one...
But even then, she's, like, it's not even like that. It's more like, he was so horrible and fucked up my life so much, and now you're fucking up my life.
Betrayal.
With the person that fucked up my life already.
Yes,
so
like,
bad.
She's over, like, Nate. She didn't bring up anything about it being about Nate. But it just shows that she's matured, and I hope to God Maddie just moves on, like, fully. Like, it seems like she has.
But yeah, I agree.
But
I
you mean, get nervous, right? But I think after the gun situation, I think she's done.
No, I agree. In season one, I liked Cassie far more, and I never really cared much for Maddie, and it's very flipped in this season. I'm pretty done with Cassie. And I think they've evolved Maddie's character in, like, a nice and believable way to be someone that's more interesting and complex than she was in season one.
Agreed. But yeah, Sydney Sweeney for the Emmy doing this fucking, like, Joker scene in the bathroom. Dude, I can't get over how creepy it is.
Fucking crazy. So who else was on the plate? We got Kat.
I mean,
Kat and Ethan.
You know what I'll say about Kat? I'm not gonna lie. So I know I don't like to, you know me, I don't love getting into all the outside gossip outside of Euphoria. I think a lot of it's just made up and, like, silly and for press.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, I feel like Kat's character overall, so boring, not interested in her at all as a character. And if you think otherwise, chime in. I could not care less about her character this season. Not because of Barbie's performance, because of her, like, lack of even being in the season, A.
Yeah.
And B, like, just even her parts in the season, though, that she is in, I'm not, like, I don't care. Like, I don't, I'm not interested. Like, she's just being kind of dickish. She's clearly, like, kind of trying to be Maddie's, like, BFF, and it's just...
Yeah, I think it's, like,
I feel like they gave her so much depth. Season one, I really related to her, like, the self-confidence issues, the, like, overeating when you're, like, going through all this shit, like, not loving yourself. I feel like they dropped that fully this season, and now she's just kind of, like, whatever. Like, she just, to me, is so, like, background.
I think they gave her an anti, like, character arc, where instead of, like, developing, she just regressed. She obviously didn't get as much screen time as she had in season one, or as deep of plot lines. I don't find it, like, unrealistic or unbelievable, but I can
really
understand.
I feel like they really focused on her so much in season one that I thought for sure there'd be a lot more this season, and so I can't help but, like...
But this is a thing people do.
A tiny bit of me, though, is maybe, like, the rumors are true. Maybe she blew up with Sam, and then that it caused, like, a, okay, we need to, like, you know, change this a bit, and then maybe they disagreed with where the character was. I don't know. I'm just saying, I really mean this, and maybe I'm totally wrong, and I'm okay with being wrong. I get a vibe that she's not into this season. Like, even the behind the scenes when she's talking about it, she doesn't seem as excited as she was season one. She's very like, oh, Kat was interesting to play this year.
Yeah, I mean,
and Bailey says anything, and I'm like, what?
Well, I don't disagree. I don't think she seems into the season. She's obviously been, like, a little bit sidelined, and she gets, like, an anti-character arc. And for me, the question is, like, what does all that, like, do to the story at large? I don't find it, like I said, I don't find
it unrealistic.
I'm not,
like, that mad about it, but
I think she's in a place where I find it, like, very believable that she got, like, involved in this weird fucking, like, put on the Party City Kat mask, like, and, you know,
Cam
dance
world
for the diaper pay pigs online. She was always kind of cruel in season one, like I mentioned.
Yeah, she was.
So I think, like, I don't find it unbelievable, but I can understand why it's frustrating from a fan's perspective to not get more out of her from this season than her going back to, like, those ways. After, like, getting what she thought she wanted.
Yes.
And, I can understand why that's frustrating.
You know why it's frustrating, though? And I don't mean to say this, but it's, like, what she said about in real life. About everyone always talking about her body. And, like, it's never about, like, her, you know, like, her personality, what she brings to the table. It's, like, always commenting on these outside things. So I don't mean this in a bad way, but I feel like it is weird that, like, more of her story isn't, like, addressed in this season, because I felt like it was so strong season one, and it was putting out a lot of good messages.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like they're like, well, that was boring, right? Like, she doesn't like her body, and she's, like, has all these problems with her weight, so let's not, like, let's sideline that for a minute. Like, it's not that entertaining, where a lot of girls, like, could really benefit from, like, getting a little more from, like, her story arc this season. That's just my little, like, pedestal speech on
I guess
that.
What I'll say is I think I don't have a problem with the storyline, but I agree that it could have been handled better. If this was the character, or if this is, like, the anti-character arc she's gonna have this season, it should have had more screen time and been more fully developed and fleshed out.
That's all I'm asking. Just a little more. I don't need, like, a
so
full episode on Kat. Do you know what I mean? I just need a little more, though.
Like, it feels, it's a little jarring for how much screen time she got in season one to have that, like, sidelined as much. And I think that they could have easily worked in, like, a little bit more to make it, like, more believable. Even if this was the direction they wanted to take her character. It should have been more fully fleshed out.
I'm not out here with a torch picketing so mad about it. I'm just saying I understand it. We're like, McKay, we joke about it and we think it's funny, but I'm like, it makes sense that McKay's out. He's in college, move on.
Yeah, right.
But for Kat, it doesn't make sense because she was a big part in season one and she's still, like, very much involved in the friend group with Ethan. Like, So it just feels a little off. So part of me is like, fuck, were the rumors true? Was something going on that we don't know about that's made this like a thing? I don't know.
I just think I agree. It should have been given more screen time. There should have been more. I agree.
But that's all I have to say. But, I mean, I just feel like we've gotten like three scenes with Kat, and I'm like, that's it.
And all it really amounts to is like, wow, she missed out because Ethan's about to win a Tony. Like,
yes, but not only that, even that, when it comes to her character, why didn't we get any scenes of her reacting to Ethan's performance? Why didn't we get any close shots of her being like, fuck, or even just like excited or anything?
Well, I mean, at least the way that they've read her, she's so apathetic about Ethan. She doesn't really give a shit. She did him so dirty with the breakup. That's true. She doesn't care.
I guess.
He's,
nothing
to her, which is sad. Like, okay, but the way they portray it is that this season, she's completely uninterested in it.
Not to continue this conversation on and on and on. Like, I'll end it after this. But you just said she's apathetic, blah, blah, blah. But then in season one, we see her at the prom, right? She treats him like shit, and then she feels horrible. She's, like, crying. They have that cute kiss. So that's what I mean by, but is she really apathetic? I feel like they really redeemed her. You were like, oh, my God, cute, like, she, like, really does love him, and she feels bad, and, like, and I just felt like they did her dirty this season. Now it's like, oh, she just sucks, and she just has a brain disorder, and she's in three scenes, and she eats goldfish on her bed. It's just like, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like they didn't really give her any kind of boost.
It's a flaw in the season. I agree.
Yeah,
I
think that's the only flaw. I love the whole season, but I will say, like, I saw it. If the rumors are true that she, like, was mad, I'm there with her.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Well...
no beef.
So, very minor, but Maddie gets a gift from her nanny woman, whatever, Minka Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean she's done? This was just, like, a summer job. She's done.
Oh, I don't know. I don't really care about this. They've done nothing with, like, this.
No, I think it was cute. I think it was just her, like, ending the job. She was sad to tell the little boy. It wasn't about Nate. She was, you got that from that, right? She was like, I don't want to tell him. I'm scared. She was talking about I think she was talking about her son. Like, I don't want to tell him that I'm not working here anymore. Like,
oh, no, she's leaving town.
Oh, what?
I said Maddie was leaving, like, East Highland. Like, she's going away. That's why she's telling her, like, I'm going away. Maddie's got, like, some plan.
Oh, wow. What do you think? Like,
I mean, unless I completely misinterpreted...
Oh, she's a senior. Her and Cassie are seniors,
unless
right?
I, like, wildly misinterpreted that scene, she was telling the lady, like, hey, I'm, like, leaving East Highland. Like, I'm going away. Like,
yes.
I don't know where she's
yes.
going or why. I don't want to assume she's going to college, because I can't imagine she got into college. But, like, has some plan.
Hey, don't say that. Fake it till you make it. She easily could have gotten to some great college.
I don't know if you can fake the grades, but maybe, you know, I guess.
Yeah,
whatever.
I know. But yeah, I feel you. I just meant, I guess she quit her job because she was talking about saying goodbye to the little boy.
I assume she was dipping because she's like, fuck Nate Jacobs. I'm done with all that. Like,
yeah, where do you think
she has no family holding her there.
Yeah.
Her best friend just betrayed her. So I understood that scene as her being like, I have some plan to like dip. Like, I'm out of like this whole town.
And her and Cassie are seniors, correct?
I think so.
Yeah, so that would make sense. Meaning like she has some plans.
Right, yeah.
We don't know yet, but she has some plans.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, should we just go into the amazing scene that is Austin Abrams, a.k.a. Ethan, just slaying this hero scene?
I mean, amazing. Like, obviously.
Iconic. Like, absolutely iconic.
Yeah,
and to
great.
See Nate squirm in his fucking chair. I'll cheers to that.
So
cheers to Nate
feeling
like a fucking idiot.
Yeah, no, it was amazing.
Because it's the first time we... ever seen Nate embarrassed. We've seen a lot from Nate. We've never seen him embarrassed.
Very rarely. He was embarrassed by Maddie at the chili cook-off.
Even then, he was in rage mode, though.
Is he gonna kill Ethan?
He was more
I'm like,
angered.
I don't know if Ethan considered the risks of doing this role. Like,
that's a good point.
I appreciate how bold he was in taking this on, but I'm like, oh my god, is he gonna die?
He's fucked.
Not actually. I think Nate won't do anything, but like...
No. But
I do. You'd have to think twice about doing that role and being like, oh my god, is this guy gonna, like, fucking kill me?
I know. But I will say, like, you're right, at the chili cook-off, but he wasn't embarrassed, he was enraged. He was like, he choked Maddie over it. He was angry.
Right,
this
right.
is pure, like, pussy, like,
I
behavior.
More about
he's
if
in
he's
a seat,
gonna...
like, oh, like, squirming, and like, Like, afraid because everyone's laughing and pointing fingers at him. It's like, yeah, bitch, see what it feels like? You've been bullying everyone your whole fucking life, and now everyone's laughing at you. And I'm sorry, but that's just karma at its finest. It is.
I wonder more if he's going to come for Lexi.
No empathy.
He's obviously so pissed. He broke up with Cassie over. He's like, that's your sister. Like, get the fuck out of my house.
Oh, good. I would love, you know what? I would actually honestly love a Lexi Nate face off. Lexi would own his ass.
Of course. I mean, he can't touch Lexi.
Unless he has a gun. I mean, that's scary.
She's too smart and too, like, normal.
She should show up in her Bob Ross outfit and be like, try and fuck with me.
So while we're on the topic of Nate, I mean, we were both planning to save this until change our minds, bitch. But I think this is too significant of a plot point to wait till then for. So I guess we should address this now, which is the Nate Jacobs dream sequence, mirror sequence situation.
Yep. Do you want me to read what our fan wrote in?
Yeah, so we had a fan write into us with a theory prior to this episode about this, which we will now read.
So this fan said, Marsha made specific reference to Nate bringing her water in bed and then telling her he loved her and kissing her, but then stated that while he told Cal he loved him, he never showed him the physical affection by kissing him. I thought that she was hinting at a fear that maybe Cal had been sexually inappropriate towards Nate in his early childhood. Note Nate's extreme discomfort at this conversation, especially around this point. He doesn't look hurt about the conversation in and of itself, but the particular subject matter. So.
Yeah. I mean, at the time I read that, I thought, you know, we really haven't had any hints prior to the last episode, I suppose, about any kind of sexual abuse between Cal and Nate. Obviously, there was a lot of other abuse, so I didn't really think of it that way. And I thought, you know, what we know about Cal so far doesn't indicate anything of that nature. When he found out that Jules was underage, he was kind of upset about it. He wasn't, like, actively seeking out underage people at that time.
No.
So I didn't really see it that way. But obviously in this episode, that does seem to be the case, because Nate's clearly having nightmares about being abused by Cal. Like, which is, like, I mean, it's pretty unambiguous. You don't, like, well, throw that in there casually. It's, like,
also, there's more. I didn't even realize. This fan also said, then I thought about a few other things. Nate's weird and unhealthy relationship with Cal. Marsha saying Cal didn't want Nate to get therapy. If he had abused him, then this makes sense. Nate's reenactment of putting his fingers in Jules' mouth like Cal has done to her in the motel room also could have been a reenactment of what Cal had done to him as a child.
Mm-hmm.
His obsessiveness with the tapes makes sense. So I'm just going to end it there, because this fan goes on and on, which, by the way, thank you. Like, the detailed responses are amazing. We really, like, appreciate the dedication. And, like, honestly, like, I will be so transparent. Alex and I read this. Did we not immediately dismiss this? We were like, that's, like, not true. Like, we, like, appreciated the dedication, but we were like, we don't think this is it.
Yeah, like I said, I think all those things are easily explainable based on Cal's just, like, unsexual abuse of Nate, plus Nate finding, like, the tapes early on and having this sexual fixation on Cal. So I didn't, like, think too much about it, but it does... but, like, yeah, absolutely, they definitely got this right. I think the reference in this episode was completely unambiguous. Like,
yeah.
I would say that it is essentially, like, fact now that Nate was sexually abused by
Cal. Oh, you think it's fact? I feel like it could be a fever dream weird thing, or it could be fact. I'm kind of on both ends. I
don't think you throw in something like that.
Unless it's insinuating something.
Yeah, unless it's like, you know, this is your...
Agreed.
This is like, hey, here's your hint, like, at what's really going on. I can't imagine a reason why you would throw in that scene and have it not mean that. It would be, like, wildly confusing.
I also think that, like, I guess if I were to say, we've said all along, right, what is going to make us break and feel any sort of empathy for Nate? Because so far, Alex and I have felt none.
I still feel
literally
none. Just kidding.
I know, but, like...
I'm sure they'll drop some Nate episode next season that'll, like, make our hearts break for Nate, but
I agree, but I'm saying you and I have said multiple times, there's nothing that's going to, like, break us. Like, we hate Nate, he's evil. We've always just said he's inherently evil, but now if this comes out as a real, like, if it's fact that Cal abused him, I mean, we can still have our thoughts. Meaning we're not gonna like love Nate and all of a sudden stan him by any means. Not. But you're gonna have a different perspective, and it's gonna be heavy shit. Of course,
things develop, and I mean, it seems like they may be developing in that way, which would lead any regular person.
I
hate that because
we were like, I was loving Cal's backstory. I was like here for it. So if that's the case, I'm gonna be like, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But that seemed pretty unambiguous to me, which is, it just feels unfortunate because they made me kind of like Cal this season, and now I'm like, well, if that's the case, like, fuck him, obviously.
I know.
It doesn't mean Nate's not evil, but obviously you feel, like, significantly more sympathetic towards him.
Of course.
If this is the reason why he's evil.
Okay, but it's like any criminal, meaning literally Nate is a criminal. He's held a gun to a girl's head, so I'm saying, like, it's like any criminal, right? You repeat crimes from your trauma. That doesn't make you, like, a good person or mean that, like, we should now feel bad for you, but it does give you more insight. That's all it is.
Yeah, crazy.
So wow, good job, fan. Shout out for sending us that. You were on the right track, and it showed in this episode.
They read that 100% right. Respect.
Oof. So I think we just have to end on this epic scene that is Ethan, who deserves an absolute Tony Award, performing this fucking amazing routine.
Love it.
We've got the dick of the punching bag and the two
descending dick, like a crucifix. A lot of bumping and grinding and
sexual tension.
Spraying of water on.
I like the confetti for the jizz too. Like whenever when the balls come out, there's just like jizz that goes everywhere.
This scene's hilarious.
And I like when Lexi's backstage, like literally like jacking off in the air, like yes, when he's doing like the jizzing moment. It's like so good.
So fucking funny.
And it's also, once again, done in good taste, meaning, like, it's not, like, evil or mean or, like, necessarily bullying, but it is calling the bully out. It's like, fuck you, you've literally fucked with everyone in the school, so now, guess what? We're gonna make fun of you. And I love when Ethan's, like, what does he say? He's like, my pecs, like, they're so big and strong right now.
He was like, can you oil up my back? Like, I can't reach because my pecs are so big.
That was so good. And also, like, shout out to Austin Abrams. Like, I will say, like, I underestimated his acting. I will say, like, I'm the first to say it. He's done a couple films outside of Euphoria where I've been like, like, kind of like Fault Under Our Stars type vibes. Like, he does like a lot of Netflix.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Oh, he was really good.
I mean,
in
a minor role, but
he was good in that. I'm sorry. Yeah. But you know what I mean. He's in that Lily and Christmas one that you hated. Lily and Dash or whatever. Oh, horrible. But I will say, like, this like episode alone, I'm like, wow, Austin Abrams brought it. Like,
he was fantastic.
Fantastic. Like,
and I love that for, like, not getting a ton of screen time in the previous episodes, he comes out so strong with this scene.
Yes.
Like, amazing. Like, I'm glad that he hasn't been, like, fully sidelined, because this is great. Like, we've always liked Ethan, and I'm glad that he's still around, like, doing interesting things on the show.
I also like when Lexi went backstage and was like, you ready? And he was like, yes, and, like, went crazy. Because that's so, like, nerdy theater kid. Like, I knew people in high school literally like that, like, going on to put on a play in front of, like, 50 parents. It's like, calm down. But it's also great.
Well,
like,
it makes sense for him because he's got to play some, like, roided out jock, you know?
Yeah, and it's also like, you know what? You know me. I've never hit on theater
kids.
If you're
about to play Nate Jacobs, you better be, like, fucking barking like a dog, like some fucking psycho.
Absolutely. Like, you know? But as someone who loves, like, High School Musical and all this shit that you don't like, it is, like, I will always say, I always have a soft spot for theater kids because I feel like they are, like, the underdogs. They're, like, the Lexi Howards. Like, they want to, like,
Revenge of the Nerds shit.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And they, like, put out their passion. They, like, let out all their, like, emotions on the stage. Like, leave it on the stage. So I was very happy for Ethan.
Yeah, I mean,
we stan Ethan. What a king.
The funniest thing about the whole scene is Nate walking out and calling it homophobic. That's such
he's like, Cassie, stop laughing. It's like, what do you say? Everyone's laughing. It's so homophobic.
That is such a funny one-liner coming from Nate. Like, I mean, first of all, it's a hilarious one-liner at all, because what is, like, more, like, pro-gay than, like, a giant, like,
dick,
a giant, like, musical number to, like, I Need a Hero, full of, like, oiled up bods and, like, dicks and stuff. Like, this is, like, this is, like, what...
Well, he said that, though. Obviously, you realize he said that because that's something a jock would say. A closeted, we always say, like, not...
Of course.
We don't even know, like, And honestly, Nate might not be gay, but that is like the comment of someone who would be closeted. Like,
it's just hilarious.
I knew guys I thought that were jocks that that now are gay and like open and cool about it. But in high school, they felt so insecure that they'd like make fun of it. I felt like that in that moment where he was just like, everyone was laughing like, that's so homophobic. It's like, Nate, you missed everything.
Like, this is what gay people love this shit. The stereotype is that gay people fucking love theater and like,
I know.
This stuff. Like,
not just theater, but like dancing, like you said, like oiled bodies like grinding and like having fun and like jizzing everywhere. Like, this right. is great. This is like a gay man's dream.
Yeah, right. It's not homophobic. Like, no. fucking like
this is like gay celebration
yeah,
on
right,
stage.
Exactly.
Like, at its finest.
Yeah, it's just a, like.
A but they
classic.
Put that in there because that's like a jock response to something
of
like
course.
This. Like instead of addressing like, oh, I'm mad because this is about me, they have to put it on like something
He's
else.
He's trying to be like righteous.
Yes.
And stuff. It's like, dude, you're just mad because your life
you're
is
literally...
so homoerotic. Like,
yes.
Football and your life and your locker room shit and all your like masculine shit
and
is
honestly...
all like insanely homoerotic.
And honestly, like Nate, like you're hot. So like, if you're gay, like please come out because like.
He's obviously, like, his dad. He's, like, everything. He's, like, pansexual.
I know. I shouldn't, like, joke about that. Like, I'm not, but I'm also, like, kind of am. Because I'm, like, if you're gay, like, fuck yeah, you're hot. Like, you get so many dudes.
He's not that hot. I mean, he would get a lot of dudes, but he's not that hot.
Yeah, his personality sucks, too. Oh, he's hot, but his personality. Nate Jacobs. He's just, But... I mean, he has good taste in women. Are you kidding me? Maddie and Cassie? Woo! Fire.
What about Jules?
And, oh, are you kidding
She's
me? Jules
one.
Is the top.
Jeez.
She's the top of the pyramid.
God.
Yeah. Wow. What an episode.
Well,
epic. And
go.
Then we end on Cassie heavily breathing through the door,
mm-hmm.
fogging up the glass.
Her hot breath.
Looking like an
glass.
Absolute psychopath.
Vengeance in her eyes.
Which is funny.
Hatred in her heart.
It's so stupid. And
She's
I hope.
Commit. What is it called when you kill your sibling?
What?
Like, you know, it's like infanticide is like killing your child. Like, matricide is like killing your mom. What's it called when you kill your sibling?
When you kill your sibling, it's murder.
You know what I mean. There's
I actually
a word
don't.
Specific for killing your... Whatever.
Think
Never
about
mind.
It. Alex, ponder on that thought.
Yeah, well, she's about to kill her sibling.
I know. I was going to say, maybe next episode, do you think we're going to get a Lexi-Cassie throwdown? Or is it going to be more Maddie-Cassie type vibe? They did show a little sneak peek of, like, Cassie and Maddie going at it on stage.
Oh, no. I think it's going to be more... I think it's going to be Lexi-Cassie.
Oh, really? They showed Maddie and Cassie fighting on stage, though.
Cassie's
Did you
like,
see that, though, in the sneak peek?
I think Cassie's seconds away from walking on stage and confronting Lexi. I think that's, like, imminent. And if Maddie's involved, it's because she's trying to, like, protect Lexi, if anything.
Okay, any other predictions? I feel like we have to say predictions because
predictions.
It feels so crazy. But, oh, my goodness, next week is the season finale. That's crazy. We've waited literally two years for this, and we're already here, and it just went by like in a snap, and I'm mind blown. I'm so mind blown.
I'm so mind blown.
I hate
it's
myself
been 2 years.
I literally hate myself. I sound like Cassie.
Oh, God. Anyhow, predictions. I have none. Who the fuck knows? This whole season's been like anything goes.
I know.
Euphoria in general is kind of anything goes. Somebody's gonna get shot at Fez's house. I guess that's my
It's gonna
prediction.
Be Fezco.
I don't know what the hell else is gonna happen.
Or it's gonna be Ashtray. And like I said, I put out there that I think it's gonna be Ashtray, and then Fez will have to deal with like him dying.
I think if Fez gets shot, he lives. If Ashtray gets shot, he dies. That's
agreed. Agreed. Okay, I'll agree on that.
And either way, it's gonna suck and be sad.
And I guess according to you, Maddie's packing her bags and leaving, so maybe she won't even be in season three. Maybe she's like, bye, bitches. I've got better places
to
be.
Yeah, I really wondered that. I mean, obviously, like, a lot of... It's very common in shows that, like, right before the finale, a character's gonna dip, and then something happens, and they're gone back in. But, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe Maddie's like, I'm on to bigger, better things. Like, see ya, bitches. Like, she kind of got, like, the maturity arc this season, where she's like, this
Agreed.
Shit is not for me.
Yeah.
My best friend betrayed me. This lady I look up to revealed that she's really not that great. Like, maybe it's time for her to, like, dip. Her boyfriend's a fucking psycho.
I will say, too.
It wouldn't not make sense.
A lot of, like, fans have been really pissed that, like, Jules hasn't been as much of, a huge character in all this. I would disagree. I think everything's been done so well and so naturally that if anything, I'm left in this season finale going, oh, wow, I thought this whole season was going to be yet again like a Rue & Jewels-centered show. I kind of like that it wasn't and that like it really like explored everything. Mm-hmm. I think it almost would have been like what you said, predictable, meaning like mm-hmm. every show, whenever there's a couple that like we all stan, they tend to just hone in on that and everyone else gets like pushed to the side.
Yeah.
I kind of liked that we explored everything. So I will say moving into season three, I kind of like that we're going into the finale not knowing really anything about Rue & Jewels. We don't know where they're at. We don't know where they're going. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, we're not in a place right now. We're not in, like, a strong place where I can even predict where they're going. I'm like, I don't right. fucking know.
Well, one thing season one did very, very well was set up a lot of interesting characters, a big cast of super interesting characters, and they made you, like, they gave you enough depth on these characters to make you care about them. And then season two has said, like, here's, like, what happens with some of these characters.
Yes.
And that leaves a lot of, like, interesting room for what happens in season three and beyond. So I don't have a problem with it because we have either. Such, like, a deep background and they've kept, like, certain storylines going significantly enough. So even, like, stuff like the cat thing, it's like, even though she got super sidelined this year, maybe next
maybe
season
she's, three, like, they go hard.
Part of it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that is one thing that I will credit season one with doing very, very well, was introducing, like, a big cast of characters and really giving you enough to care about all of them.
A lot.
Which is hard to do.
Really hard. And I will say, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know. I don't know if the finale will tell us where Rue & Jewels are at, but I think, like, what you just said about season one, I think they also did a good job, though, of really convincing you that they have, like, a very deep connection and love that, like, mm-hmm. really is just different. And
yep.
I think... I pray and hope that they will, like, be together forever because we all want that, right? Like, I don't think anyone...
Yeah.
I don't think there's one person in the world that doesn't want them together.
Oh, there are. There's people that hate it. There's people that hate Jewels. There's people that hate Rue.
Well, okay. Well, they can fuck off because I'm sorry. I love them.
Yep. All right. Well...
Whew. Other predictions? The only other thing I'll say is I really... As far as, like, Rue and, like, her drug relationship and all this shit going down... I don't know if that'll come up at all, because the season finale seems to be mostly about the play and stuff. I hope she goes down a path where she wants to become clean, but I don't think we're there yet. And I think season three, if anything, we're going to just see more, like, turmoil, but that's just mm-hmm. my prediction.
We'll see. Yeah, that's where more of, like, Lori and, like, the...
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, we can't... They're not just... Euphoria
right now, like
detailed.
I said, it's like, they're not going to kidnap
they're not gonna
her
drop
out of her
that.
Suburban home. But next season, if Rue's cut loose and living on the streets,
yes.
like, she could really
yes.
easily get wrapped up in that.
And show. Sam's not the type to just leave plot lines behind. Like, we're gonna get, like, something
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, right. This bitch wasn't introduced for no reason.
Yep. So, scary. But yeah. Woof! Right. What
well.
An episode! I need a hero!
Yeah.
Ethan
yeah,
gets right. the Tony Award!
Okay. Superlatives. Paige,
all right, let's
give
go.
Me your best dressed.
Best dress for me, I'm gonna have to say Lexi, just because she, like, ran the play. I liked her funeral dress, even though it was, like, sad and depressing. I liked her dress. I liked all of her outfits. I thought
she
her makeup
great.
Was cute. I just yep. she played so many
skirt,
roles.
The cat skirt was money.
Oh, the cat skirt was amazing. Yeah. And when she was, like, hot in that hot pink dress and she said it smelled like shit behind stage, that,
yeah,
was,
that
funny.
Was funny.
It was
yeah.
cute.
I think technically I have to give it to Lexi, although I appreciate Fez in the suit. Actually,
yeah.
no, I'm just going to give it to Fez, especially because he opted for no tie, which is, like, the classic David Lynch look, which I also appreciate. And, you
yeah,
know,
it's
I fucked
hot.
With that myself.
And he looked, and you know what?
White shirt buttoned up to the top with a suit coat and no tie is a move.
And you know what, Fezco?
Fez,
you heard
taste.
It here first on That's So Euphoric. You indeed look handsome
Not
to everyone.
Ditch the tie. Yeah, he looked good. All right, worst dressed.
Oh, you go first. You're, like,
Cassie.
Laughing like you know. Oh, yeah, duh.
I mean, she looked insane.
Awful.
Almost the whole episode.
Awful. Her hair was so scary.
Cassie,
I hated it,
like,
all.
Doing Maddie is, like, so bad. Like,
the bra, the hot pink bra top in the hallway with that skirt.
How
it was just
she
bad.
She away wearing that at high school. I mean, I know it's
Euphoria. It was funny when Maddie was like, scary. Well, she sure looks the part.
Yeah. All right, Bae.
Lexi. Bae of the episode is Lexi.
Yeah. It has to be. Although Ethan is a close second. He really brought it.
Oh, you're right. Got it. It is split. I think they both I think it's fair to say split, even.
Yeah, all right, that's fine. Okay, what about the good old big purple dirty rat bastard?
Cassie.
Yeah,
Cassie. 100%.
Just the pure disrespect for her relationship with Maddie.
Disrespect, and this is Lexi's big night, and she's once again all focused on her fucking self.
Yep, totally.
Victim, 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 victim. Disrespect tired
for her
of sister, it.
Disrespect for her best friend. Just useless.
I'm tired of it. We all go through a lot, Cassie, but, you know, buck up, little camper.
Ditched by Nate at the end. Kicked out.
And just that scene was so creepy when she was like, I'll eat whatever you want. I'll say whatever. I was like, all right, I'm out. God. I, stan Sydney Sweeney, but I'm not Team Cassie anymore.
No.
Not Team Cassie.
All right, what about the class clown?
Class clown. I mean, once again, Lexi. I feel like her play was funny as fuck.
Class clown for me is hands down Ethan, primarily for his portrayal of Mrs. Howard.
He's hilarious. You're right. That was amazing. So good.
Having him play her is perfect and hilarious.
He's so well done. What a good idea. Yeah. I wonder what sparked that idea. You know what I mean? Because they could have gotten anyone to do that.
No, it was great. He was perfect.
It was so good.
All right. What about the song?
Song. Oh, mine was, or you go first because I have to pull it up. I forgot the name of it.
So I was about to go with, let me see.
I need a hero. I'm just kidding. Okay, I'll say mine first. No, mine was More by Bobby Darin, the song that Cassie and her dad are dancing to, because I thought, we didn't go too in depth on that scene, but that scene really was a tearjerker for me.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know. Like I said, you don't ever get to see her experience of what she went through with her family and how she reacted to that. And it really broke my heart to see a young girl be betrayed by her dad. Her dad literally abandoned, upped, and just left.
Yeah.
And poor little Lexi. And look at her now putting on this fucking play and slang. Yeah. So.
Yep. Well, mine was about to be The Word Hurricane by Air, which is from the Virgin Suicide soundtrack, which is amazing. Until the fucking credits hit, and then I was like, I know this song. What is the song playing during the credits? And I couldn't find it anywhere, and I fucking figured it out, and it is the Cannibal Holocaust theme by Riz Ortolani, which is one of my all-time favorite horror movies. It's the grimiest movie to ever be made. It's so grimy that in the 70s, the director had to go to court in Italy to prove that he didn't really kill the actors in the movie because it was so grimy.
Are you Everyone serious? Thought they
died. Yeah, it's the first.
You talk about this all the time. I refuse to watch
it. The first found footage movie. It's the idea is this crew goes to the Amazon to film cannibal tribes and everything goes wrong and they get killed by the cannibals and eaten and it's all found footage. And it's so, the effects are incredible. It's from the 70s and it all looks 100% real.
Did they have a good budget or is it more that it's so raw?
It's grimy. It's so low budget. They really went to the Amazon and filmed with local tribes in the middle of nowhere. And everyone saw it and thought the actors really, they thought it was a snuff film and the actors really were dead because the effects are so good and it's so gnarly.
Wow.
And the score is great. The song's super good.
So why do you think that? So is that the only? But are you saying the song was used in that movie, or is that
the theme? It's the Cannibal Holocaust theme. That's the name of the song.
Wow.
It's the score for the
movie. So do you think Sam's into that shit? I could definitely see him being into it.
He's so into it's obvious that he's way into
I feel like you and Sam having beers would be the best moment ever. I feel like you and Sam have so much in common when it comes to interests, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to talk to him. He clearly is into really grimy, weird horror movies, which is all I'm into.
Yeah. And he's really I feel like his personality, from what I know, is very similar to yours. I feel like you guys would get along so well.
Putting the Cannibal Holocaust theme in a major HBO show production about teenagers doing drugs is incredible. Who would do that?
That's love that for you.
He just won me over as a massive fan for life just for that choice alone.
I love that for you.
Amazing.
All right, Euphorians, it is time for Change Our Minds, Bitch.
Change Our Minds. Wow, God. Change Our Minds, Bitch. Jesus.
I said it right.
No, not you. Me.
Alex.
I'm sick, and also, so, you know, like, please forgive if I've been a little
slurred. I know, poor Alex. A little
more slurred or sloppy than
Alex
usual.
Alex has had this, like, you know? Awful cold for, like, 4 days.
It's
so.
Not COVID, thank God.
No, it's not COVID, but he's been really sick. He's sick, but he's here still drinking and doing this podcast. So.
Still drinking. So please excuse if this has been a little.
I mean, you have to drink for Lexi's play. We have to.
I mean, we were a little amped for the play, too. So.
So the first one that's up, a fan wrote in. Love the pod. You guys are great.
Thank you.
That's way too nice. Horrible. Disclaimer, this is not my theory. I saw it on TikTok, but I felt like I needed to share it. So we know that Nate is 18 and he's the oldest sibling. Or no. Fuck. So we know Nate is 18 and the oldest sibling is 25. That is a 7-ish year difference, allegedly. So the missing brother is most likely the middle child and Nate is the baby. Could all be bullshit, but thought it was still interesting. Stay euphoric.
Yeah.
Love this. Wait, love this like email that you sent, by the way. So thank you. We think you're great. Also, this is a very interesting write-in.
Not only do we think you're great, I also think you're right. And I feel stupid a little bit for never having, like, looked more into this. But here's the background. Like, they show the Jacob's family portrait. And there is a child, the middle child, who looks very, very much like Nate.
Well, not just like Nate. I said this too. Looks like the kid actor that plays Nate looks in the show much. In season one.
I don't know whether it is or is not the exact same person, but it looks very much like the actor.
I guess if you really wanted to do your research and go that deep, like a fucking loser, you could figure that out.
However, but this person makes an incredibly good point. Which is that, yes, we know for a fact that Nate's older brother, Aaron, is at least 24 or 25, and Nate is 18. So that's a 6 to 7 year age difference. And when you look at that family portrait, the person we always thought was Nate and the oldest brother are not 6 to 7 years apart. And
no.
Most, they're like 4, maybe.
Maybe
like,
three.
They look very similar in age. If I had to guess, I'd say 2 or 3. And
that's interesting. That changes a lot of our theories.
I don't know that it changes my theory about a killing. I mean, it does seem weird that the youngest brother would kill a brother significantly older than him. So I guess it kind of throws that into a fucking loop a little bit. But
a lot of
thoughts. I do think that this person, assuming that the, like, you know, the production department planned everything and did every executed
they did.
Everything.
I'm sorry,
right,
but they did. Sam so far has proven, like,
yeah,
I'm
sure
sorry, but other than this one photo that we joke about with a little brother, there is nothing in Euphoria that's fallen through the cracks.
Well, I think the photo must be right as well, because Cal, they made a point to have Cal take it with him in this season. So
yeah,
there's no way the portrait could be wrong. So
not only is it not wrong, Sam's taken it into thought that like this has to be a storyline. Right. So even if like they didn't plan on it being a storyline, there's been so much talk about it that like during COVID, Sam was like, I have to write in some sort of like storyline.
So I have to, all I can think is that this person's right. I think Nate is not the middle child. I think he's the youngest child. I don't think he killed his brother. I think maybe the middle brother was abused like Nate was and killed himself due to Cal's abuse.
It's crazy that we're having to even contemplate Cal being an abuser to his kids. That's crazy. I mean,
it doesn't seem like
it's not
abused,
unbelievable,
it
but
it doesn't seem like he abused Aaron because he seems so like fine and dandy with everything. But maybe he abused the middle kid and the middle kid killed himself. And, you know,
there's a lot. A lot.
It throws a lot of, this theory throws a lot of
appreciate
things
this person
like,
writing this in.
Whack. And
yeah.
All I can assume based on the evidence presented is
this is why we do change our mind, bitch, because I want to be thrown off. I want to be like, fuck.
And I haven't really seen many other people call this out, so I don't feel like this is super widely known. I feel like everyone just assumes Nate's the middle child.
Agreed. And it's never said. It's
good
not factual.
Great
so.
Call out.
Very all right. Our next one.
Good eye.
Our next change our mind. Oh, well, this fan opens with, this is not a change our mind, bitch. But I believe that 2 episodes ago, you guys were talking about Angus Cloud's live tweeting of the Runaway Rue episode. You read one that I think went right over your head and it made me laugh so hard when I initially read it. He said something like, my mama would have smacked the orange out of me. And Paige said, what the hell is that even supposed to mean? Which I did say that.
Yeah, I didn't understand either.
No, so Alex and I, in other words, last episode, we did not understand the joke. So this fan wrote in, he was talking about his gingerness, his orange hair. I was dying, just wanted to share so that you could enjoy the joke as well. I am enjoying the joke. I did not know that the smacking the orange out of me tweet had to do with Angus being a ginger.
Yeah, good call. I often forget
that Angus is a ginger. Yeah, I forget.
I don't think of him that way, but he obviously is.
His head's always shaved, so we don't think of it that way.
Right, they're totally
But he's a ginger.
Great call. I would never have, like, I didn't really think about it, but yeah, you're right.
Like, a funny, silly change your mind, but, like, you did change our mind, because we did, literally were so stupid, we didn't know the joke.
No, totally.
We were thinking it was a prison suit or something. We were laughing. We were like, what does it mean?
I didn't know what that meant.
Well, thank you for...
maybe he was Dutch, and it was, like, a...
You didn't change our mind, you, like... You educated our minds.
We've opened our minds.
You educated, yeah.
To the fact that Angus is secretly a ginger.
Okay, so well, it's not a secret. He is a ginger. Okay, next one. So this one also isn't really like a change our mind, but it's interesting enough that Alex and I were like, wow, this is complex, and this person really like put a lot of thought into this response. And so I just wanted to read it because I think it's worth reading on the pod. What do you think, Alex? Anything else you want to say before I read it?
Let's hear it.
Okay. So, this season's theme, I believe, is giving each character what they think they desperately want, which ultimately represents their deepest flaw. So, then she goes to list examples, or this person does. Rue finally gets jewels and drugs. Her flaw is addiction. Cassie gets male validation from the most popular guy in school. Daddy issues. Lexi finally gets to be the protagonist of her own story. She never takes action. Cat begins a relationship with Ethan and finds love. Self-esteem issues. Nate gets to forget about his dad since he left. And Maddie gets to cosplay as a rich girl boss in a massive mansion. Her flaw is passiveness. Now that everyone has what they want, they realize that it's a shit show. Drugs are obviously bad and destroy all relationships. Being loved by Nate is the equivalent of getting run over by a car and the driver spitting on you. The play is going to cause massive drama directed at Lexi, which she's not used to handle. So we'll see how she handles that, which I guess we will see in next episode. Mm-hmm. And the rich lady, this is where the change your mind starts. Maddie works for, I believe, is going to turn out to be super fucked up. It goes on from there, but I want to just like end it there because it's a really long response, which thank you. I appreciate once again, like all the thought and, you know, like the time you took to respond to us. So I really appreciate it. But for time's sake, I'm not going to read it all. But that being said, Alex and I both agreed, although this wasn't like necessarily changing our minds, this was like a good overview of season two, mm-hmm. which is great for like the last two episodes.
Yeah, I thought that was definitely insightful. I think it...
Oh, Meatball thought so too. The third co-host agrees.
Chiming in. No, I think that's actually very insightful. I think especially for the characters mentioned there, it really does apply. And I think it kind of goes in line with another theme that we've brought up throughout the season, which is that like a lot of characters this season are really like reaping what they sowed, getting their comeuppance. Yes. Yeah, I mean, 100% agree. What does Rue want? She wants to do drugs and have jewels. She gets it. It turns out horrible.
Yep. Cassie was the daddy issues. The, like,
yeah.
She wants love. She gets Nate. Like,
yeah, and it all turns out horrible. She alienates everyone in her life and loses Nate.
Lexi's was, she said it was, like, the play. Let me bring it up again.
Yeah, I think Lexi is still a TBD. Lexi definitely, I agree that Lexi is.
She said Lexi finally gets to be the protagonist in her own story, but she never takes action.
Yes, agree. And I think the only TBD there is we'll see if it works out good or bad for her. I think this might work out.
I hope so.
For Lexi.
But we don't know yet. And also, to be fair, when this fan wrote in, she hadn't seen episode 7. So.
Right.
She was on the right track, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is I think it's a really great point about what, like, kind of the over...
She also said Cap begins a relationship with Ethan, finds, quote-unquote, love, self-esteem.
Yeah, right. Ditches Ethan.
Maddie cosplays as a rich girl boss in a massive mansion. I love that.
Yeah, the only thing I think about that one is I feel like everyone is really read into this... the woman that she works for as being like this weird shadowy character, and I think it's almost just
okay, but I'll
more
agree.
Simple than it is. I think it's like really, I don't really think there's anything super weird going
on
with
either.
This lady. I think it's just
kind
of. I also think we learned the camera thing ended up being nothing. All it meant was she gave her a gift of the dress, meaning she saw her on camera.
Like, and
well, they're also rich. Rich people have cameras everywhere. I nannied in Malibu, and trust me, every nanny job I ever had in Malibu, they had a camera in every room. So it's like, that's normal. If you have money, you have cameras. So I don't think there's any, like, extra layer of story there.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that some people have really latched onto, is that being, like, some weird dark shadowy thing with this couple. And I think it's kind of just as simple as it looks. I think they're just a rich couple that she worked for, and she got a look at what, a life she could have. She could be the, like, passive, like, trophy wife who kind of gets everything she, like, wants on the surface.
And guess what? That pool scene was important, because now we've learned, we've got more depth into Maddie. And when that woman revealed, like, oh, I fucked over my friend a bunch in high school, but I'm better now. Right. I think Maddie kind of, like, was turned off by it. I think, she was like, oh, you did? Like, she was kind of like, I was looking up to you, and now, like, I'm kind of like, what?
Right. I think she's kind of had to reevaluate, like, what she wants and believes.
Yes.
And so I think that was kind of the purpose of that relationship, and that it doesn't necessarily extend further beyond that. Well, there's still one episode left, so maybe some creepy weird shit's going to happen, and I'll be...
Yeah,
I'll look like an idiot with egg on my face. But right now, I think that was just kind of more surface level than everyone
I agree.
It served that purpose for her character and not some weird, like, dark, twisty thing.
Totally. And not to, like, we don't need to go on and on about this, but I will say Minka Kelly, who plays the woman, she was only slotted to be in one episode. Sam continued her to be in a couple more. So if I were to say anything in terms of, like, will this be a thing... I mean, I'm like you. I do not think so. But if I were to think so, that would be the only reason why. Because why is she in, like, more than she needed to be in? Maybe it was to tell a bigger story.
Right.
But we don't know yet.
But anyways, at large, I think that's a great insight. I think that's a very valid and
well-articulated thought.
Theme of the season.
And it showed in the play. Like I said, this was written in before this episode dropped. So, wow. Like, that... we had to read that, because that kind of just showed what we saw on stage.
Yeah, great call. And it's a good, I think that's also a great use of that, like, theme on Sam's part. It's always interesting to give characters what they want and see what happens. And,
yeah.
That always
see how
makes
they,
for, like,
where they take
storytelling.
It.
Like, all these people are always driven by these motivations. What happens if everyone gets what they want?
Yes.
Most people don't turn out to be as happy as they think they will
nope.
be. And that's what happened here.
Wow. Well... I mean, amazing, amazing, amazing episode. I will cheers to Lexi Howard yet again, because this play was just so good. She did such a good job. Our life should be... First of all, Our Life blows Oklahoma out of the fucking waters.
Fuck Oklahoma.
Fuck Oklahoma. Cheers to that. All
right.
Cheers to Ethan being a hero.
Yep.
I will not cheers to Cassie.
Fucking Kathy.
We might as well call her Kathy. God, at this point.
Yeah.
Such a mess. No cheers to her. Season finale is coming up. Euphorians. Oh,
one
my fucking left. God.
All right.
All I will say, though, is yes, we have a finale coming up, big and exciting, but we might have more coming after the finale. So stay tuned. Keep listening. And thank you so much for your thoughtful responses. We just love it. We love that you all are as passionate as we are about this show.
Yeah, absolutely. And also thank you for all the, like, the love and the reviews. I know we brought up, like, a salty one earlier, but we've also had people say, like, incredibly flattering things about us that are
it's just
completely
insane.
Undeserved by just
so undeserved
us idiots in our apartment, but they are insanely flattering nonetheless and hugely appreciated. So
yeah, appreciated, because just like everybody else, we're just getting drunk and having fun talking about the show. This isn't, like, serious. It's just for fun, you know. Yeah. So
all right,
cheers to that.
You know what we say,
that's so euphoric.
And see you next Tuesday.
Like today's episode? Great, we love that for you. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. Leave us a podcast review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever the fuck you listen to us weekly. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at @so_euphoric for all the euphoria updates you could ever possibly want in your life. Thanks for tuning in. Peace out, bitches.